sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past and smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Well, thank you, Dave, and welcome once again to Yesteryear, the best from the golden age of radio. Well, once again, from our large archive of over 35,000 old-time radio shows, we present a couple of treats for you. On today's program, we'll reach back to 1951 with the mystery series The Falcon, starring Les Damon. But first, on the lighter side, let's go to school with Our Miss Brooks. Like Lucille Ball, Eve Arden's comic talents were largely unnoticed for years in Hollywood until radio made her a star. In addition to his role as Osgood Conklin, Gail Gordon starred as Flash Gordon in the 1935 radio series and portrayed Mayor Latrivia on Fibber McGee and Molly. Our Miss Brooks aired over CBS Radio from July 1948 through July of 1957 and on television from October 1952 through 1956. On this edition, Connie Brooks isn't necessarily interested in a lucrative job teaching a traveling hillbilly troupe until she realizes it may allow her to spend the summer with her beloved Mr. Boynton. However, first they have to pass themselves off as country folk. From July of 1955, it's Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden and Gail Gordon, on this edition of Yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Bert and Marge, Amos and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past and smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, volio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you.
Well, our Miss Brooks, who teaches English at Madison High School, has often heard the old expression, money is the root of all evil.
And if it's true, I should be wearing a halo. Any day now, I expect my bank to report me to the Bureau of Missing Persons. Last Thursday, I happened to mention my financial predicament to my landlady at breakfast. I don't know what to do, Mrs. Davis. I simply can't save any money.
Oh, it's just as well, dear. Money is the root of all evil.
I know.
Which reminds me, Connie, you owe me 48 and a half evils. I mean dollars. Your rent is past due.
Let's not live in the past, Mrs. Davis. I'd be happy to pay you if I had the money. You know that.
Well, of course I do. Let's forget all about money and discuss something pleasant. Summer's just ahead, Connie. Where are you going to spend your vacation?
Well, I thought I'd pack all my clothes and go to the Riviera.
The Riviera?
That's a pawn shop on the other side of town. Sam Riviera runs it.
Well, if I were in your spot, I'd try to get a job with the Deacon.
The Deacon?
Deacon Jones. His square dance troupe is playing Town Hall this week. My goodness, you should hear that old deacon swing out on his crazy mixed-up fiddle.
Oh, yes, now I recall the name. Isn't he the fellow who bills himself the Hillbilly Heifetz?
That's the chap. I don't know about you, Connie, but I dig that kind of music.
Well, when you're through digging, bury it for me, will you?
Believe me, that man makes nothing but money. I thought of you when I read the big ad you ran in yesterday's paper.
What did it say?
Well, he's planning a long tour this summer, and since some of his troupe have children traveling with him, he'd like to hire some school teachers to go along. The salary offered is $500 a month.
$500? Well, I don't know about you, Mrs. Davis, but I dig that kind of money. Why, if I could spend just 1 month with his troupe, I could afford the best vacation. Oh, no. Not with the square dance troupe. I'm sorry, but Mother didn't raise her girl to do-si-do.
Well, you do as you please, dear. It was just a suggestion.
Oh, there's Walter Denton to drive me to school. Come in, Walter.
Greetings, ladies. Form a line. A nickel a kiss and my lips are divine.
Hello, Walter. Pull up a chair. Ain't no food. The cupboard's bare.
Why the square dance greeting, Walter?
Yo, I'm on a hillbilly kick, Mrs. Davis. When I was in the mall shop with some kids last night, we turned on the radio and got Town Hall. We danced for one solid hour to the music of Deacon Jones. And Miss Brooks, I have news. If you'd like to earn $500 a month this summer, there's an ad.
Mrs. Davis told me about the Deacon's ad, Walter, and I'm not interested.
Okay. So maybe Mr. Boynton would be interested. The way he's been cutting down expenses lately, he could probably use that money. As soon as we get to school, I think you should try to talk him into it.
I should talk him into it? Wouldn't that be a little presumptuous?
Yeah, maybe you're right. I really think a job like that would be a great experience for you, Miss Brooks, but now I can see where it might not be so hot for Mr. Boynton. I mean, after all, he's a single guy. Wouldn't know anyone in the troupe but you. Have to spend all his time with you, night after night, just like being married, traveling around, night after night.
Like I say, as soon as we get to school, I'll try to talk him into it. Good morning, Mr. Boynton. I'd like to talk to you for a moment before class begins.
Oh, certainly, Miss Brooks. Come on in.
Mr. Boynton, does the name Deacon Jones mean anything to you?
Just that he's been visiting local high schools in search of school teachers to tour the backwoods country with his troupe at a salary of $500 a month, and that while he was at Henry Clay High yesterday, he announced that our school will be one of his stops this afternoon.
Never heard of him, huh? Fair to middling money for a nice, soft job, don't you think?
Well, I wouldn't say it's soft. A fellow from Clay High told me the deacon said he'll only employ teachers who are capable of doubling in his show, preferably teachers who have a rural background and who could make the hillbillies feel at home.
In other words, he's looking for a cross between Albert Schweitzer and Spade Cooley. Brainy, but homespun.
Yeah, that's about it. Naturally, I've given up all hope of landing a job like that.
But why?
Why? Well, you must be kidding, Miss Brooks. Oh, gosh. Oh, shucks. I wouldn't know how to act like a hayseed.
You wouldn't have to act. I mean, with a little rehearsing, it would become natural. I really think a long trip through those hills would do you a world of good. Not to mention me.
You? Miss Brooks, surely you couldn't pass yourself off as a rural character.
For $500, I could out Judy Canova.
Yeah, that's a lot of money, all right. I'll tell you what, Miss Brooks. I've got a book of very witty minstrel jokes down in my locker. Now let's meet here in my lab during lunch hour, and we'll rehearse some of those jokes.
I'll be here with bells and a gas mask.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Conklin.
Good morning, sir.
At ease, but remain alert.
Miss Brooks, Mr. Boynton, as you know, the Board of Education recently distributed general exam papers for the purpose of conducting a comparative survey to determine faculty efficiency in the schools in this area.
Yes, sir.
A total of 7 high schools participated in the test, and Mr. Stone, the head of the board, just called to tell me the results.
Oh? Where did our school come in, sir?
Dead last, ma'am. My heart goes out to our students in this hour of shame, Miss Brooks. The blame for their abysmal showing in the test must, of course, be laid at the doorstep of our teachers.
But, Mr. Conklin...
Good students are made, not born. The failure of our students actually reflects the shocking inability of you teachers to cram some knowledge into their thick skirt, into their willing minds. Henceforth, I'll permit no faculty fraternizing during school hours. And I shall now tack a notice on the bulletin board to that effect. That will be all.
Goodbye, Mr. Conklin.
Bye, sir.
Gosh, if we're forbidden to fraternize, we won't be able to rehearse before Deacon Jones comes over this afternoon.
Not here in the lab, at least. I know, Mr. Boynton. We'll go underground.
Underground?
We'll meet in the supply room downstairs. Mr. Conklin hasn't been there in weeks.
Well, it's risky, but we'll just have to chance it. After all, our entire summer is at stake. $500.
And a whole month in each other's company, Mr. Boynton. You and me, traveling from city to city, just the two of us. Just think of those nights.
What the heck with the nights? Think of those days, sightseeing. Searching for curious fossils in strange places.
I think I've found mine.
You are listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Well, at noon, in direct violation of Mr. Conklin's anti-fraternizing edict, I stealthily scurried down to the supply room for a clandestine meeting with Mr. Boynton, our purpose being to rehearse ourselves into a rural mood for the impending arrival of Deacon Jones, the hillbilly Heifetz. I rapped gently, and in a moment the creaky door was opened, not by Mr. Boynton, as I expected, but by Mr. Conklin's daughter.
Enter, friend.
Harriet.
It's all right, Miss Brooks. I know all about your crazy mixed-up scheme.
Who squealed?
Oh, nobody. But while you and Mr. Boynton were cooking up your plot in his lab this morning, I happened to be right outside watering his window plant, and I overheard.
You and your crazy mixed-up long ear. Did you tell anyone what you overheard?
Oh, not a living soul. Just Walter Denton. He wants to try to land a job with the Deacon's troop, too, Miss Brooks. He's sure his father will give him permission to leave home for a month.
Permission? His father would probably swap him for an undernourished tapeworm. Look, Harriet, if you say a word about all this to your dad, you'll spoil everything. He'd be furious.
Oh, he'd be jealous, too. About that $500 a month job, I mean. Last week, Mother cut Daddy's allowance, Miss Brooks, and she said he won't be able to go anywhere on his vacation unless he earns some extra money to pay for it. Golly, it looks as if poor Daddy will be stuck in town all summer.
Hold it, Harriet. Who goes there?
A member of the underground.
Who?
Walter Denton, the vagabond lover.
Come on in, Rudy.
Look, Miss Brooks, I brought three tambourines for you, me, and Mr. Boynton, partner. Oh, hi, Harriet.
Oh, isn't it exciting, Walter? I just can't wait to see Deacon Jones in person. With a name like the Deacon, I'll bet he looks real dignified.
Hold it. Who goes there?
It's Mr. Boynton.
Hey, what's in the box, Mr. Boynton?
Well, some minstrel show and square dance material, Walter. I'll have it opened in a second.
I was hoping it was food. I haven't had lunch yet.
Oh, I'll be glad to get some sandwiches for us, Miss Brooks.
Oh, that's very nice of you, Harriet.
Don't mention it. I'll be back in a little while.
Look at this, Miss Brooks. A big book of minstrel jokes and a beautiful banjo. Just listen to this tone.
Gee, Dad, it's a Wurlitzer.
When I pick My Dog Has Fleas on the banjo like that, Miss Brooks, we spring our first humorous anecdote. You can read it right from the book. Here you are.
Thanks. What's that you played on the banjo, Mr. Interlocutor?
My dog has fleas.
Funny kind of a dog. My dog has pups. Oh, no.
How corny can you get?
don't like your attitude, Walter. I thought that was pretty nifty. Let's get down to some serious rehearsing, Miss Brooks. You read some of those jokes aloud. Meanwhile, I'll sit here with the banjo on my knee.
Why not put me on your knee and let the banjo tell those jokes?
I memorized the best ones, I think, so I'll coach you. Now, listen. First, I say... I just know this one will break me up. First, I say, you don't have to tell me off anymore. I consider myself told.
Uh-huh.
Then you say, if you're told, why don't you put on your itty-bitty overtoad?
I say that?
Yeah.
Not for $5,000.
Come on, Miss Brooks. We'll never land those jobs with Deacon Jones if you don't practice. I'll put a twang in your voice.
But sure, it's not hard, Miss Brooks. If we're going to convince the deacon that we have a rural background, we've got to sound like hillbillies.
Well, all right, but I... My, Harriet got those sandwiches pretty fast. Is that you, Harriet?
No, but you're close.
Run for the hills! It's a revenuer!
Mr. Conklin!
Holy cow!
Well, Miss Brooks?
I think I'll put on my itty-bitty overtoad.
Now I see how my faculty piffles away its time. Small wonder my students romped off with the booby prize in the comparative survey tests. Well, I have a little bulletin for you. When Mr. Stone called me with those results this morning, he also informed me that the inspector of the State Board of Education is due in town. If he hears of this incident...
Oh, why should he hear of it, sir? We were merely rehearsing in the hope that we might land a job with Deacon Jones in the summer.
There can be no possible explanation, Boynton.
It pays $500 a month.
That is neither here nor $500?
Yes, sir. Get another tambourine, Walter. We have a new end man.
Miss Brooks will return in a moment.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Well, the possibility of a $500 a month job was something too good for the Madison High faculty to resist, even if it meant traveling with a hillbilly band. However, while Miss Brooks was preparing for the arrival of Deacon Jones, in another section of town, the head of the Board of Education, Mr. Stone, was entertaining a more forbidding visitor.
My secretary has returned from lunch now, Mr. Jones. I'll make arrangements for your transportation immediately.
Thank you, Mr. Stone.
Oh, Dorothy, I've been honored by a visit from the inspector of the State Board, Mr. Matthew Jones. Please see that a car is placed at his disposal immediately. Now then, sir, we have switched the side of your address to our board members and the PTA this evening. Fortunately, Town Hall became available at the last moment. Yes, it seems some hillbilly jazz band encountered rent trouble. They fled the city this morning.
I see. I should like to include in my address some facts concerning the comparative survey your board conducted recently. Frankly, I'm interested in the low scores rather than the higher ones.
Well, the bottom mark was posted by Madison High. I have Madison's test figures right here on my desk, if you'd care to examine them, sir.
Thanks, I would. Disgraceful. Absolutely shocking. Just look at these individual scores. Walter Denton, 14%. Well, that boy must be a blithering idiot. Either that or he has idiots teaching him. Who's principal at Madison High?
Mr. Conklin, Osgood Conklin. Rather a pompous man, but I believe he has some of the most brilliant teachers in the city, Mr. Jones.
That I'd like to see for myself. Hello. Is Mr. Conklin in?
Oh, I'm sorry. He stepped out of the office just a few minutes ago, but he ought to be back pretty soon, Mr.
Jones.
So you're Deacon Jones.
You what's that?
Oh, please make yourself comfortable, sir. Excuse me.
What's your rush, Harriet?
He's here. Am I guessed right, Miss Brooks? He's very dignified looking.
Who is?
Deacon Jones. He's waiting in Daddy's office. I'd better pass the word. Excuse me.
Well, the deacon. Move over, Daisy May. Here I come.
Oh, hello.
Well, fry my chitlins if it ain't Cousin Jones. Didn't know nobody was in here, else I wouldn't have come busting in like I done did, savvy?
Who are you?
I teach English in this here institution.
You're an English teacher?
Ain't nothing else but. My name's Miss Brooks. Care for a chaw of hog's liver?
Well, thank you, no. Just how long have you been teaching, Miss Brooks?
Oh, a heap of years. And believe me, I get a kick out of learning them kids. Only thing is, I kind of miss the folks back home. The folks in the hills. I'm sure a hankering to be back with my people.
You may get your hanker sooner than you think.
Honest and true, you mean it?
I sure do, honey child.
Oh, hi there, Mr. Barton.
I dropped my Mickey Mouse penknife. I can't find a darn thing nowhere.
Mr. Boynton here is a biology teacher.
A what?
Biology teacher. B-I-O-L... let's see. B-I-E-O... let's see. B-I-O-E...
Get your toes.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
Amazing. Hey, Mr. Boynton, do you always walk around school in your bare feet?
Oh, shucks, no. He's only in his bare feet because he's trying to find his penknife. Yeah. Can't pick up nothing with his fingers. Bites his nails, you know.
Bites his nails?
Can't scratch worth a lick, but it's great for petting possums.
Oh, hi there, Walter. This here is one of our pupils.
Oh, it ain't fair. I was just chasing a mouse and he ducked into a little hole and I could only get my head in.
This here is Walter Denton.
And naturally.
You just call me Walter. W-A-L-L-L. L-L-C-W-O-L-E. Let's see now. W-A-W-L. Why don't you just call me Zeke?
Zeke, what?
Count your toes, Zeke.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
You better borrow one from Mr. Boynton. He's got 11.
I feel a bit weak. Do you mind if I sit down?
Well, dog my catch if we ain't got company. You'll have to excuse my dirty shirt. It's my wife's turn to wear the clean one.
Who are you?
This here's our principal.
Principal? This? This is Mr. Conklin?
You just call me big, fat, lovable Hezekiah. I don't know who you are, mister, but we're just plain down-to-earth folks here. Hill folk. Yes, indeedy. Minutes of time, like now, we like to forget our classrooms and chores, and as I pick up my old banjo...
Yeah, now, just a minute.
And as I pick up my old banjo...
Yeah, put that thing down.
Winds think of the folks back home and drift into songland.
Come and see it by my side if and you love me, if you love me. I'm patient to bid me adieu.
Not adieu.
Yes, remember the real river,
Don't
do-si-do and form a star, I could dance with a grizzly bear.
This is incredible.
Come and see yet by my side if you love me. Do not hasten to bid me.
I learned how to kiss like a glutton, playing trumpet for Ina Ray Hutton. Just remember the Red River Valley and the old songs that I sang to.
Every time I dance with Louise, I get a run in my BVDs.
I don't believe it. I just don't believe it.
Friend, you ain't heard nothing yet.
Come and say it by my side if you love me.
Sing it, Zeke.
Hasten to bid me.
Used to love the silver screen, but whatever happened to Bobby Breen?
But remember the Red River Valley.
While I was eating an ice cream cone, Bell invented the telephone.
Radio songs that I sang to you.
Went to a taffy pool, and now I know how to milk a cow.
Radio songs that I sang to you.
What is going on here?
Mr. Stone!
Yipe!
Hand me my shoes.
Mr. Stone, I understand that these fugitives from Tobacco Road are members of Madison's...
Please, run along, Deacon Jones.
Deacon? What are you talking about, Miss Brooks? This happens to be Matthew Jones, inspector for the State Board of Education.
Lovable Hezekiah, he fainted. Sir, you're Matthew Jones?
The inspector for the state board?
That's right. Now speak up. What do you have to say for yourselves?
Just remain.
What good will it do to speak? We are plainly up the creek.
Was produced and directed by Larry Burns, written by Joe Quillen and Al Lewis, with the music of Wilbur Hatch. Mr. Conklin was played by Gail Gordon. Be sure to be with us next week for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
From July of 1955, it's been Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden and Gail Gordon. In a moment, we'll return with The Falcon and The Case of the Big Talker as Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Thanks again, Dave, and welcome back to Yesteryear. On the second half of today's program, we'll enjoy an episode of The Falcon from the 1950s. The Falcon first appeared in Michael Arden's 1940 short story, which was later brought to the screen in 1941. George Sanders starred as the Falcon in the earliest films, but was replaced by his real-life brother Tom Conway in The Falcon's Brother. The Falcon aired on radio from 1943 through 1954, with Michael Waring played in turn by Barry Kroger, James Meagan, Les Tremaine, and Les Damon. In today's episode, a crime boss hires a squeamish hitman to eliminate his only rival. From April of 1951, it's the Falcon with The Case of the Big Talker, here on Yesteryear.
Hello? Yes, this is the Falcon speaking. Oh, Nina. I'm glad you called. Well, you'll have to cancel me out tonight, Angel. I just landed a new client. Mm-hmm. Of course, I wanted to turn down his business, but no matter how I talked, this boy insisted on giving it to me.
This is Ed Hurley, friends, inviting you on behalf of the Kraft Foods Company to listen to The Adventures of the Falcon, starring Les Damon. Now join him on the air when the Falcon solves The Case of the Big Talker. It's Sunday evening in New York, and a trio huddles in the rear booth of the Pelican Club. Reading from left to right, they are Joe Greco, Danny Bell, and William Palmer. And from the deference accorded Mr. Palmer, it's obvious who leads this band, which is no more than Mr. Palmer deserves. All you have to do is listen, and you'll hear some of the slickest arrangements.
Well, of course, the big thing in our favor is the element of surprise. Weber's had everything his own way so long, he won't be expecting any opposition.
Yeah, that's smart operating, Palmer. We pulled the same deal in St. Louis.
Oh, did you, Danny?
Oh, sure, sure. I just walked into this guy's place and gave him 24 hours to leave town.
Uh-huh, and what happened?
Well, he was gone in four.
They play awfully rough in St. Louis, don't they?
Yeah, you're not kidding.
Maybe this league won't be fast enough for him, boss.
There's always that possibility, Greco.
Why, I remember one time...
Much as I'd love to hear you reminisce, Danny, I'm afraid it's getting late.
Oh, well, that's okay. Just remind me to tell you sometime about Lefty Wilson.
And I'll make a note of it. But getting back to Weber...
You don't have to draw me a diagram, Palmer. I got the picture already. This Weber gets the big gambling play from the society crowd, and you want it.
Very much so.
Okay, I'll have a little talk with the man.
Oh, I don't doubt that you're a brilliant conversationalist, Danny, but Mr. Weber is also gifted. And let's assume that nothing you say moves him. What's your next step?
Well, we take over.
You see, Greco, nothing baffles him. We take over.
Ah, sure, it's as simple as...
Falling off a log?
Yeah.
Wonderful. When can we expect this eviction to take place?
Hey, now, wait a minute, Pa.
Don't tell me that you haven't an answer for that.
Well, don't forget, I'm a newcomer in town.
Oh, I've got news for you, Danny. The people in New York are exactly like those in St. Louis. They eat, they sleep, they breathe. And a little .38 caliber slug can stop all those vital functions.
You mean you expect me?
Uh-huh.
Well, you're crazy.
You hear that, Greco? I'm crazy. Here I voiced a simple suggestion.
Look, if you want someone to kill Weber, you better get yourself another boy.
Well, what's wrong with the one I just hired?
Well, first of all...
Look, Palmer, never mind his phony. I'll do it.
Greco, this is not the army. If I wanted a volunteer...
I only thought
well,
that I...
don't. Oh. Danny's going to come through for us, aren't you, Danny?
Well...
You see, Greco, you misjudged him. Why, the minute I spied Danny, I bet he was a man of action. And you know me. I only put my money on sure things.
You and your big mouth. No matter how many times I warn you, Danny.
Oh, cut it out, Martha.
I'll cut it out when you learn to keep your trap shut. We had to leave St. Louis because someone called your bluff. But Mr. Loudmouth doesn't remember that.
Now, look, honey, that's water under the bridge. What are we going to do now?
What are we going to do?
Well, you're my wife.
You don't have to remind me. The only thing that keeps me going is the hope that someday I may be your widow.
Now, look, Martha, suppose I talk to Palmer.
Did you say talk? That's how you got into this mess.
Oh, Martha.
Now, about this man, Weber.
Yeah, well, he's nobody to mess with. Maybe we just better pack and go. Huh?
Oh, no. I'm not doing any more running. You can go if you want to, but I'm sticking right here. I like New York fine.
Oh, but baby.
Will you stop wagging your tongue and let me think?
Yeah, sure.
Wait a minute. I got an idea.
Oh, I knew I could count on you, baby.
Yeah, This Weber guy is loaded, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, suppose he was informed what Mr. Palmer was planning for him. Don't you think he'd be grateful?
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be worth all kinds of money to him to get the drop on Palmer. I bet he'd go 10,000, easy.
Well, what are you waiting for?
You mean?
Yeah.
But what'll I tell him?
What'll you tell him? You ask me that?
Oh, now listen,
Martha. What for? Weber is the man who should listen. And if you can't talk him out of 10 grand, don't bother coming back.
Yes?
Mr. Weber?
That's right, sir.
My name is Danny Bell. That's a nice gambling layout you got out there.
Oh, yeah, very kind.
Well, of course, it's not as big as a couple of places I've got back home.
Home?
Yeah, St. Louis. Greatest little town in the world.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I hated to leave, but I got a proposition I couldn't turn down.
If you'll excuse me, Mr.
Bell. Danny Bell.
Well, I'm very busy.
Now, take it easy, Weber. You see, this proposition concerns you.
I can't imagine how.
Oh, you think I'm running off at the mouth, huh?
And that's rather an inelegant but accurate way to describe it.
Well, suppose I was to tell you that someone was planning to knock you off.
Now you have aroused my curiosity.
Well, is it worth 10 grand for the complete details?
Definitely.
Well, the name of your party is William Palmer.
Oh, Mr. Palmer, eh?
Yeah, he figures on taking over this place.
It just occurred to me, Mr.
Bell.
How do I know this isn't a hoax?
Hey, you don't know who you're talking to.
No.
Well, Palmer and me are just like this, see? He wanted me to knock you off. It's a lucky thing for you, you got friends.
Oh, have I?
Oh, sure. They told me you were a swell guy.
They were exaggerating.
Yeah, that's the only reason I came here.
Well, I appreciate it, Mr.
Bell.
Forgive me, I have a horrible memory for details.
What about that 10 grand? I'm running a big risk, you know.
Then you'd better start running.
Look, Weber.
But perhaps you need something to send you on your way. Well?
All right, I'm going.
Thank you.
Don't you worry, Weber. I'll be seeing you.
I doubt that, sir. I don't ever expect to hear from you again. Is that understood?
That you, Martha?
No, Mrs. Bell ain't in.
Well, who's this?
Blanche West.
Well, this is Danny, Blanche. Where's my wife?
I don't know, Danny. She went out about an hour ago. She asked me to mind the house.
Anybody call?
Only a Joe Greco.
Joe Greco?
Yeah, he said you should ring Mr. Palmer when you got in. You want the number?
No, I'll call when I get home. When Martha comes in, you just...
What was that, Danny? There it goes again. It sounded like... Danny!
Second, Louise. Right with you.
Hiya, Ainge.
Why, Mr. Waring.
I'm sorry, I was expecting someone else.
Little girl named Louise Mason?
How do you know?
Oh, I'm a guy who knows everything. Greco's the name. Joe Greco.
What do you know about Louise?
I know she had a date with you and she ain't gonna make it.
Why not?
Let's just say she was indisposed. If you're going to call her, Waring, you'll be wasting your time. I don't think she'll answer. Believe me, friend, I know wherever I speak.
All right, Greco, where is she?
What are you getting so excited about?
What happened to her?
This is New York, broad daylight. What could happen to her?
Look, Greco.
Hey, hold on to my coat. Ain't going to bring her back. If you really want her, all you got to do is say the word.
What's the word?
Yes.
Yes what?
Yes, you work for Bill Palmer.
What are you talking about?
Did you read about this jerk, Danny Bell, getting himself knocked off last night?
Well?
Well, the cops think the boss did it.
Why?
Did you ever try to reason with a cop?
Yes.
You've been pretty successful. That's why Palmer wants you to work for him.
Was it his idea to grab Louise?
Who says anybody grab her? You jump to conclusions.
All right. When will she be released?
The minute I get your word, you go to work.
How do you know I won't break it?
That's where guys like us got the advantage over guys like you. We trust you.
A Suppose I turn up evidence to prove that your boss did kill Danny Bell.
And he deserves to fry.
Okay, let's go see Palmer.
That's just what I was going to suggest. Lucky I got a cab waiting.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Now, back to the adventures of the Falcon. 20 minutes have passed since Joe Greco dropped Mike Waring off at police headquarters. And surprisingly enough, Sergeant Corbett doesn't seem too pleased to see our hero.
Well, if it isn't that high-flying bird, the Falcon, what brings you to this nest?
Where's Bill Palmer?
You know, for a second there, I thought you said Bill Palmer.
I did. Isn't he boarding here?
What do you want with him?
I'm working for him.
You're kidding.
Now look, Sergeant...
You wouldn't actually take that bum for a client.
Well, wouldn't I?
Why, I've known you for almost 10 years.
Well, I guess it only proves you don't know the real me.
Maybe I don't. They say everybody's got his price.
Now who's the they that's always doing all the saying?
Elliot! Tell Palmer Mike Waring's here.
Look, Sarge, suppose I...
Why bother, Mike? You don't owe me any explanation.
Oh, all right, as long as you're going to be pig-headed.
Hello, Waring.
Oh, come in, Palmer.
Well, I see Joe Greco got to you.
He certainly did.
Now, listen to me,
I wouldn't want to waste your valuable time.
What's he sore about?
Oh, he feels I let him down.
I hope I never know that feeling.
Listen to me, Palmer. If anything happens to that girl,
now,
the way...
Don't go hammy on me, Waring. Nothing's going to happen to her. She's probably back home now.
Well, if I find out you killed Danny Bell...
I know. You're going to let me fry.
I'll pull the switch personally.
Well, I hope you got a union card. How long will it be before they let me go?
Well, that depends on how much help I get from you.
You'll get everything you need.
All right. You didn't kill Bell, who did?
Mike, I'm going to surprise you.
You have no idea.
No, I've got a wonderful one. What do you think of Weber?
Who?
Hans Weber. I understand Danny had some trouble with him.
Over what?
I couldn't say, but I know Danny threatened to kill him.
Well, maybe I ought to have a few words with Weber.
I don't care how many words you have, just make sure they're the right ones.
Badly, Waring.
No, what, Weber?
It's only on occasions like this you come up to the club.
Well, I can't afford it.
Even with Bill Palmer for your client?
Now we're right back where we started. He thinks you should be in his place.
Such ugly suspicions, Mike. Believe me, I hardly even knew this...
Danny Bell.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, by any chance, would you happen to recall if you killed him?
Well, I might remember that if I had a motive.
You did. Danny threatened you.
Then I could plead self-defense.
You could.
Well, thanks for the advice, Mike. If I decide to take it, I'll mail you a check.
Come.
Hello, Sergeant.
What are you doing here?
I brought a lady around to see you.
I'm not interested in any of your friends.
Oh, you will be in this one.
Now, look, Waring.
Mrs. Bell.
You want me?
Yeah. This is Sergeant Corbett.
We've met.
What's going on here?
Well, if you'll listen for a minute, you'll find out. Mrs. Bell, tell him the story you told me earlier today.
Where do you want me to begin?
Right at the top of the page. Remember the time of your husband's murder?
Yeah. It was 9:45.
And where were you at that time?
She doesn't need an alibi.
Well, why don't you give that mouth a rest? Do you happen to recall where you were, Mrs. Bell?
Yeah. I was at the Pelican Club.
Did anyone see you there?
Bill Palmer.
What?
That's right. I was with him from 9 to 10:30.
And if Palmer was with you, he couldn't possibly have killed your husband.
No.
Why didn't you tell me that before?
You didn't ask, honey.
You satisfied now, Sergeant?
No.
Well, maybe I can find someone who won't be so difficult. Come along, Mrs. Bell. We'll go see the DA.
Homicide, Sergeant Corbett.
Corbett, this is Wilson of the DA's office. A friend of friend of yours was just around to see my boss.
Oh.
Mike Waring?
He's no friend of mine.
Well, he must be a good friend of the chief's. The DA wants Bill Palmer released.
Sergeant! Hey, Corbett!
Huh?
It's me. Can I give you a lift?
No, thanks. I'm discriminating about the kind of people I'm seen with.
Meaning I'm not?
Uh-huh.
Oh, listen, you idiot.
You ought to feel pretty proud of yourself.
Well, all right, as long as you ask, I do.
Sure. I don't know many private detectives who could do what you did for Palmer.
You're darn right.
But then the detectives I know don't go in for perjury.
Hey, listen, who are you...
On your way, Waring. You're blocking traffic.
Hello, Mr. Palmer.
Well, as I live and breathe.
And you can thank me for both.
All right, Martha, thanks. Satisfied now?
Mm-mm. Not quite. I like people to show their gratitude in a more tangible way.
I don't think I understand you, Martha.
I was supposed to get $5,000 for lying to the cops.
Oh, well, I've come to the conclusion I made a mistake. I could have had Joe Greco do it for nothing.
Then you know where you would have wound up. I saved your life, Palmer, and don't ever forget it.
If I do, I'm sure you'll remind me.
Yes, indeed.
Suppose I told you I didn't kill your husband.
Don't make me laugh.
Oh, they let me go.
And we both know why. So you better dig up that money, otherwise...
You'll... What?
Don't ever try that again.
Oh, you shouldn't have said that, Martha. I'm a gambler, and that's the kind of challenge that I can't resist.
Get it out.
There's no pleasing you. First you complain because I don't give you anything, then when I do, you yell twice as loud. I don't know what I'm going to do with you. Yes?
Is Mr. Palmer in?
Oh, who wants to know?
Hans Weber.
Oh. What's on your mind, Weber?
Oh, Palmer. I just thought I'd offer my congratulations on your release.
Thank you.
Frankly, I never thought you'd make it.
Well, I had a good man working for me, Mike Waring.
But he needed help.
Oh, you mean Danny Bell's widow?
Yes. And then to repay her kindness the way you did.
What do you mean?
Oh, she told me the whole sordid story. She probably thought I would be a little more appreciative.
Mm-hmm. And were you?
I'm ashamed to say this, Palmer.
You weren't?
Well, offhand, I couldn't see how that information was going to help me. So now I'm afraid Martha thinks as badly of me as she does of you.
And I didn't believe we had anything in common.
Oh, we have, Palmer. A great deal. Let's get together real soon and compare notes.
Now, back to the adventures of the Falcon. Several hours have passed since the extremely friendly conversation between Palmer and Weber. And now at the Falcon's apartment.
Hello, Mike.
What are you doing here, Sergeant?
I just dropped by to apologize.
You what?
Yeah, Louise Mason called me at home and told me why you agreed to work for Palmer.
Oh.
Why didn't you say something? I would have understood.
I tried to.
I know you did. Am I forgiven?
Yeah, sure, Corbett. Come on in.
Thanks.
Care to join me in a drink?
Yeah, I'm off duty. Start pouring, boy. You know, I never thought you were going to get Palmer out.
Well, strictly between us, Sergeant, I was a little surprised myself.
Of course, Danny's wife's perjury didn't hurt any.
What are you talking about?
Oh, didn't you know, Mike? She was reached.
You're crazy.
She admits it herself.
When was this?
About a half hour ago.
She's out of her mind. I don't know why she came to you with that story.
She saw her. She claims you wouldn't pay her off.
I wouldn't pay her off?
Uh-huh. She says you made the deal for Palmer.
She's lying. If she was bribed, Palmer did it himself.
Without your knowledge or consent, like they say.
Yes.
Still, it's kind of embarrassing for you.
Is it?
You get Palmer released, and according to the law, we can't pick him up again.
I know that. Just wait till I get my hands on him.
A couple of the boys downtown think you already did.
Now what are you babbling about?
Somebody put a slug through his brain. You'll die when you hear who that somebody is. Want to get a colt, Mike? Will you go like that?
Now, look. I don't know anything about Palmer's murder, and I know less about Martha's perjury.
You don't have to yell. I believe you.
Huh?
Of course, the opinions expressed here are my own and in no way reflect the opinions of my sponsor, the New York Police Department.
Now, listen, Corbett. You got to give me a break.
What do you want?
A chance at Martha Bell.
That can be arranged.
And I want to see Joe Greco.
You don't think...
Why not?
He worked for Palmer.
Yeah, so did Danny Bell, remember? And while you're at it, pick up Hans Weber.
You don't want much, do you?
I don't think so.
Well, maybe you're right. There are 7 million people in New York, and you could have involved them all. All right, I'll get a call out to pick them up.
I beg your pardon. Is Sergeant Corbett...
Right here, Mr. Weber.
I was told you wanted to see me.
You were told right. This is Martha Bell. Or have you two already met?
No.
Well, have you, Weber?
I never contradict a lady.
Well, this is Joe Greco.
Yeah.
Likewise, I'm sure.
Listen, Sergeant, what's the big idea?
Yeah, what are we waiting for anyway?
The star of our show. Oh,
thank you, Sergeant Corbett.
You just made it, Mike. They were ready to walk out.
They don't know what they would have missed.
Yeah, you're funnier than Groucho Marx.
And I don't even wear glasses. You tired, Weber?
No, just bored.
Oh. Well, we'll see if we can make it interesting for you. Gentlemen and Mrs. Bell, we are gathered here together to determine the murderer of one William Palmer.
Hear, hear.
Now, would anyone care to hazard a guess?
Oh, is this an audience participation program?
Yes. So suppose I pass among our contestants. First, I have a question for you, Martha.
How nice.
Why did you tell Sergeant Corbett I was the one who got you to lie for Palmer?
You did.
And where did all this take place?
At your apartment the day before we went up to see him.
Now, that's a nice try, Angel. But it isn't the right answer, because I spent that entire day in Jersey on another case.
Listen, Will.
Sorry, we're a little pressed for time, but don't feel badly. You win at least a 5 to 10 year stretch for perjury. Now, Greco, you're next.
Am I?
Yes. What were you doing at the time of Palmer's murder?
I was down at the Pelican Club.
How long were you there?
From 6 to 11:30.
And Mr. Palmer died?
At a 8:15.
Now, who told you that?
I did.
Okay, Sergeant. Now, let's get on to Mr. Weber.
Must you?
Well, I'll start you off with something easy. You remember Danny Bell?
This lady's husband?
Yes. May I ask if you have an alibi for the time of his murder?
So far back. Can you give me a little hint?
Yes, it happened at 9:45 on...
Oh, yes. Well, if memory serves me right, at that time I was at my club greeting my guests.
And their names?
Perhaps Senator Burns might remember that evening.
Why, Shuddy?
Well, there was a little unpleasantness at 9:40 about one of his checks. It was made of rubber.
Well, that completes the first round. And we have a winner.
Have we?
Yes, Mrs. Martha Bell. Will the lady please stand?
Listen, you comic. What are you babbling about?
By killing your husband and Bill Palmer, you have hit the jackpot.
No.
Yes, you win that famous trip up the Hudson to Sing Sing with all expenses on the house. Oh, yes, I forgot to mention, Angel. That trip is only one way.
Hey, Mike.
Oh, look, Sergeant, I'm tired. I need a rest.
Don't be ridiculous. We couldn't get along without you. Why did Martha kill Danny?
Well, simple. She was fed up with him. He never did anything right in his life. And when he tried to shake down Weber and didn't get a dime, that was the final straw.
What kind of a motive is that?
Well, the newspapers are full of stories about wives who have murdered their husbands for less.
And what about Palmer?
Well, she killed him because he wouldn't pay off after she bailed him out with her alibi.
Did she dream up that alibi deal?
Well, sure.
That was a smart piece of work.
Smarter than you think. Because Palmer didn't need the alibi. He was with Joe Greco at the time.
Why didn't he say so?
Who would have believed it? No, she was shrewd. You see, she sold Palmer the idea that she could help him. And at the same time, she helped herself.
I don't see how.
Well, if Palmer was with her, naturally it follows that she must have been with him. And if he didn't kill her husband, neither did she.
Well, the thing that gets me is why you took this case in the first place.
I told you, Sergeant. One of Palmer's boys abducted my girlfriend.
I know, but that's no reason.
What?
If you ask me, she's a lucky girl.
Oh, are you out of your mind?
Well, the way I look at it, being kidnapped is bad enough. But she'd have been in a lot more trouble if she'd kept that date with you. Good night, Mike.
The Case of the Flaming Club. The Case of the Flaming Club. That's the title of next week's Adventure of the Falcon. When Mike Waring learns that if a man tries to make things hot for someone who has a knife, he's likely to get stuck. So be sure to listen at this same time next week to another exciting Adventure of the Falcon, brought to you by the Kraft Foods Company. The Adventures of the Falcon are based on the famous character created by Drexel Drake, produced by Bernard L. Schubert, written today by Eugene Wang, and directed by Richard Lewis. Music was by Arlo. Les Damon was starred as the Falcon, with Ken Lynch as Sergeant Corbett. Ed Hurley, he's speaking for the Kraft Foods Company.
From April of 1951, it's been The Case of the Big Talker, with Les Damon starring as Michael Waring, the Falcon. Well, I'm afraid that's all we have time for on this edition of Yesteryear, but make it a point to join us again next week at this very same time for the best from the golden age of radio. Till next time, I'm Craig Roberts. So long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat listening nightly.